Chapter 18, Continued. February moved towards March, with no change in the weather, except that it became windy as well as wet. To general indignation, a sign went up on all common room notice boards that the next trip into Hogsmeade had been cancelled. Ron was furious. "It was on my birthday," he said. "I was looking forward to that." "Not a big surprise, though, is it?" said Harry. "Not after what happened to Katie." She had still not returned from St. Mungo's. What was more, further disappearances had been reported in the Daily Prophet, including several relatives of students at Hogwarts. "But now all I've got to look forward to is stupid apparition," said Ron grumpily. "Big birthday treat." Three lessons on, apparition was proving as difficult as ever, though a few more people had managed to splinch themselves. Frustration was running high, and there was a certain amount of ill-feeling towards Wilkie Twycross and his three Ds, which had inspired a number of nicknames for him, the politest of which were Dog Breath and Dunghead. "Happy birthday, Ron," said Harry, when they were woken on the 1st of March by Seamus and Dean, leaving noisily for breakfast. "Have a present." He threw the package across onto Ron's bed, where it joined a small pile of them that must, Harry assumed, have been delivered by house elves in the night. "Cheers," said Ron drowsily, and as he ripped off the paper, Harry got out of bed, opened his own trunk, and began rummaging in it for the Marauder's map, which he hid after every use. He turfed out half the contents of his trunk before he found it hiding beneath the rolled-up socks in which he was still keeping his bottle of lucky potion, Felix Felicis. "Right," he murmured, taking it back to bed with him, tapping it quietly, and murmuring, "I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good," so that Neville, who was passing the foot of his bed at the time, would not hear. "Nice one, Harry," said Ron enthusiastically, waving the new pair of Quidditch keeper's gloves Harry had given him. "No problem," said Harry absent-mindedly, as he searched the Slytherin dormitory closely for Malfoy. "Hey, I don't think he's in his bed." Ron did not answer. He was too busy unwrapping presents, every now and then letting out an exclamation of pleasure. "Seriously good haul this year," he announced, holding up a heavy gold watch with odd symbols around the edge and tiny moving stars instead of hands. "See what Mum and Dad got me? Blimey, I think I'll come of age next year, too." "Cool," muttered Harry, sparing the watch a glance before peering more closely at the map. Where was Malfoy? He did not seem to be at the Slytherin table in the Great Hall, eating breakfast. He was nowhere near Snape, who was sitting in his study. He wasn't in any of the bathrooms or in the hospital wing. "Want one?" said Ron thickly, holding out a box of chocolate cauldrons. "No, thanks," said Harry, looking up. "Malfoy's gone again." "Can't have done," said Ron, stuffing a second cauldron into his mouth as he slid out of bed to get dressed. "Come on, if you don't hurry up, you'll have to apparate on an empty stomach. Might make it easier, I suppose." Ron looked thoughtfully at the box of chocolate cauldrons, then shrugged and helped himself to a third. Harry tapped the map with his wand, muttered, "Mischief managed," though it hadn't been, and got dressed, thinking hard. There had to be an explanation for Malfoy's periodic disappearances, but he simply could not think what it could be. The best way of finding out would be to tail him, but even with the invisibility cloak this was an impractical idea. He had lessons, Quidditch practice, homework and apparition. He could not follow Malfoy around school all day without his absence being remarked upon. "Ready?" he said to Ron. He was halfway to the dormitory door when he realized that Ron had not moved, but was leaning on his bedpost, staring out of the rain-washed window with a strangely unfocused look on his face. "Ron, breakfast?"
"I'm not hungry."
Harry stared at him.
"I thought you just said..." "Well, all right, I'll come down with you," sighed Ron, "but I don't want to eat."
Harry scrutinised him suspiciously.
"You've just eaten half a box of chocolate cauldrons, haven't you?"
"It's not that."
Ron sighed again.
You wouldn't understand."
"Fair enough," said Harry, albeit puzzled, as he turned to open the door.
"Harry," said Ron suddenly.
"What?"
"Harry, I can't stand it."
"You can't stand what?" asked Harry, now starting to feel definitely alarmed. Ron was rather pale and looked as though he was about to be sick.
"I can't stop thinking about her," said Ron hoarsely.
Harry gaped at him. He had not expected this and was not sure he wanted to hear it. Friends they might be, but if Ron started calling Lavender Lav-Lav, he would have to put his foot down.
"Why does that stop you having breakfast?" Harry asked, trying to inject a note of common sense into the proceedings.
"I don't think she knows I exist," said Ron with a desperate gesture.
"She definitely knows you exist," said Harry, bewildered. "She keeps snogging you, doesn't she?"
Ron blinked.
"Who are you talking about?"
"Who are you talking about?" said Harry, with an increasing sense that all reason had dropped out of the conversation.
"Romilda Vane," said Ron softly, and his whole face seemed to illuminate as he said it, as though hit by a ray of purest sunlight.
They stared at each other for almost a whole minute before Harry said, "This is a joke, right? You're joking."
I think I love her," said Ron in a strangled voice.
"Okay," said Harry, walking up to Ron to get a better look at the glazed eyes and the pallid complexion. "Okay, say that again with a straight face."
"I love her," repeated Ron breathlessly. "Have you seen her hair? It's all black and shiny and silky. And her eyes, her big dark eyes, and her—"
"This is really funny and everything," said Harry impatiently, "but joke's over, all right? Drop it." He turned to leave. He had got two steps towards the door when a crashing blow hit him on the right ear. Staggering, he looked round. Ron's fist was drawn right back. His face was contorted with rage. He was about to strike again. Harry reacted instinctively. His wand was out of his pocket and the incantation sprang to mind without conscious thought. "Levi corpus!" Ron yelled as his heel was wrenched upwards once more. He dangled helplessly upside down, his robes hanging off him.
"What was that for?"
Harry bellowed.
"You insulted her, Harry! You said it was a joke!" shouted Ron, who was slowly turning purple in the face as all the blood rushed to his head.
"This is insane," said Harry. "What's got into—" And then he saw the box lying open on Ron's bed, and the truth hit him with the force of a stampeding troll.
"Where did you get those chocolate cauldrons?"
"They were a birthday present," shouted Ron, revolving slowly in mid-air as he struggled to get free.
"I offered you one, didn't I?"
"You just picked them up off the floor, didn't you?"
"Well, they'd fallen off my bed, all right? Let me go!"
"They didn't fall off your bed, you prat! Don't you understand? They were mine! I chucked them out of my trunk when I was looking for the map! They're the chocolate cauldrons Romilda gave me before Christmas, and they're all spiked with love potion!"
But only one word of this seemed to have registered with Ron. "Romilda!" he repeated. "Did you say Romilda? Harry, do you know her? Can you introduce me?"
Harry stared at the dangling Ron, whose face now looked tremendously hopeful, and fought a strong desire to laugh. A part of him, the part closest to his throbbing right ear, was quite keen on the idea of letting Ron down and watching him run amok until the effects of the potion wore off. But on the other hand, they were supposed to be friends. Ron had not been himself when he had attacked,
and Harry thought that he would deserve another punching if he permitted Ron to declare undying love for Romilda Vane.
"Yeah, I'll introduce you," said Harry, thinking fast. "I'm going to let you down now, okay?"
He sent Ron crashing back to the floor. His ear did hurt quite a lot. But Ron simply bounded to his feet again, grinning.
"She'll be in Slughorn's office," said Harry confidently, leading the way to the door. "Why was she being there?" asked Ron anxiously, hurrying to keep up. "Oh, she has extra potions lessons with him," said Harry, inventing wildly.
"Maybe I could ask if I can have them with her," said Ron eagerly.
"Great idea," said Harry.
Lavender was waiting beside the portrait hole, a complication Harry had not foreseen.
"You're late, Ron," she pouted. "I've got you a birthday."
"Leave me alone," said Ron impatiently. "Harry's going to introduce me to Romilda Vane."
And without another word to her, he pushed his way out of the portrait hole. Harry tried to make an apologetic face to Lavender, but it might have turned out simply amused, because she looked more offended than ever as the fat lady swung shut behind them. Harry had been slightly worried that Slughorn might be at breakfast, but he answered his office door at the first knock, wearing a green velvet dressing gown and matching nightcap, and looking rather bleary-eyed.
"Harry," he mumbled, "this is very early for a call. I generally sleep late on a Saturday."
"Professor, I'm really sorry to disturb you," said Harry as quietly as possible, while Ron stood on tiptoe, attempting to see past Slughorn into his room. "But my friend Ron swallowed a love potion by mistake. You couldn't make him an antidote, could you? I'd take him to Madame Pumphrey, but we're not supposed to have anything from Weasley's wizard Wheezes and, you know, awkward questions."
"I'd have thought you could have whipped him up a remedy, Harry, an expert potioner like you," asked Slughorn.
Said Harry, somewhat distracted by the fact that Ron was now elbowing him in the ribs in an attempt to force his way into the room.
"Well, I've never mixed an antidote for a love potion, sir, and by the time I get it right, Ron might have done something serious."
Helpfully, Ron chose this moment to moan,
"I can't see her, Harry. Is he hiding her?"
"Was this potion within date?" asked Slughorn, now eyeing Ron with professional interest. "They can strengthen, you know, the longer they're kept."
"That would explain a lot," panted Harry, now positively wrestling with Ron to keep him from knocking Slughorn over.
"It's his birthday, Professor," he added imploringly.
"Oh, all right, come in then, come in," said Slughorn, relenting. "I've got the necessary here in my bag. It's not a difficult antidote."
Ron burst through the door into Slughorn's overheated, crowded study, tripped over a tasseled footstool, regained his balance by seizing Harry around the neck, and muttered,
"She didn't see that, did she?"
"She's not here yet," said Harry, watching Slughorn opening his potion kit and adding a few pinches of this and that to a small crystal bottle.
"That's good," said Ron fervently. "How do I look?"
"Very handsome," said Slughorn smoothly, handing Ron a glass of clear liquid. "Now drink that up. It's a tonic for the nerves. Keep you calm when she arrives, you know."
"Brilliant,"
said Ron eagerly, and he gulped the antidote down noisily. Harry and Slughorn watched him. For a moment, Ron beamed at them. Then, very slowly, his grin sagged and vanished, to be replaced by an expression of utmost horror.
"Back to normal, then?" said Harry, grinning. Slughorn chuckled.
"Thanks a lot, Professor."
"Don't mention it, my boy, don't mention it,"
said Slughorn, as Ron collapsed into a nearby armchair, looking devastated.
"Pick me up, that's what he needs,"
Slughorn continued, now bustling over to a table loaded with drinks.
"I've got butter beer, I've got wine, I've got one last bottle of this oak-matured mead. Meant to give that to Dumbledore for Christmas. Oh, well," he shrugged.
He can't miss what he's never had. Why don't we open it now and celebrate Mr. Weasley's birthday? Nothing like a fine spirit to chase away the pangs of disappointed love.
He chortled again, and Harry joined in. This was the first time he had found himself almost alone with Slughorn since his disastrous first attempt to extract the true memory from him. Perhaps if he could just keep Slughorn in a good mood, perhaps if they got through enough of the oak-matured mead.
"There you are, then," said Slughorn, handing Harry and Ron a glass of mead each before raising his own. "Well, a very happy birthday, Rafe."
"Ron," whispered Harry. But Ron, who did not appear to be listening to the toast, had already thrown the mead into his mouth and swallowed it. There was 1 second, hardly more than a heartbeat, in which Harry knew there was something terribly wrong, and Slughorn, it seemed, did not.
"And may you have many more. Ron!"
Ron had dropped his glass. He half rose from his chair and then crumpled, his extremities jerking uncontrollably. Foam was dribbling from his mouth, and his eyes were bulging from their sockets.
"Professor!" Harry bellowed. "Do something!"
But Slughorn seemed paralysed by shock. Ron twitched and choked. His skin was turning blue.
"What?
But..." spluttered Slughorn. Harry leapt over a low table and sprinted towards Slughorn's open potion kit, pulling out jars and pouches, while the terrible sound of Ron's gargling breath filled the room. Then he found it, the shrivelled, kidney-like stone Slughorn had taken from him in potions. He hurtled back to Ron's side, wrenched open his jaw, and thrust the bezoar into his mouth. Ron gave a great shudder, a rattling gasp, and his body became limp and still. Chapter 19. Elf Tales.
"So, all in all, not one of Ron's better birthdays," said Fred.
It was evening. The hospital wing was quiet, the windows curtained, the lamps lit. Ron's was the only occupied bed. Harry, Hermione and Ginny were sitting around him. They had spent all day waiting outside the double doors, trying to see inside whenever somebody went in or out. Madame Pumphrey had only let them enter at 8 o'clock. Fred and George had arrived at 10 past.
"This isn't how we imagined handing over our present," said George grimly, putting down a large wrapped gift on Ron's bedside cabinet and sitting beside Ginny.
"Yeah, when we pictured the scene, he was conscious," said Fred.
"There we were in Hogsmeade, waiting to surprise him," said George.
"You were in Hogsmeade?" asked Ginny, looking up.
"We were thinking of buying Zonkos," said Fred gloomily. "A Hogsmeade branch, you know. But a fat lot of good it'll do us if you lot aren't allowed out at weekends to buy our stuff any more.
But never mind that now." He drew up a chair beside Harry and looked at Ron's pale face. "How exactly did it happen, Harry?" Harry retold the story he had already recounted what felt like 100 times to Dumbledore, to McGonagall, to Madame Pumphrey, to Hermione, and to Ginny. "And then I got the bezoar down his throat and his breathing eased up a bit. Slughorn ran for help, McGonagall and Madame Pumphrey turned up, and they brought Ron up here. They reckon he'll be all right. Madame Pumphrey says he'll have to stay here a week or so, keep taking essence of rue."
"Blimey, it was lucky you thought of a bezoar," said George in a low voice.
"Lucky there was one in the room," said Harry, who kept turning cold at the thought of what would have happened if he had not been able to lay hands on the little stone. Hermione gave an almost inaudible sniff. She had been exceptionally quiet all day, having hurtled white-faced up to Harry outside the hospital wing and demanded to know what had happened. She had taken almost no part in Harry and Ginny's obsessive discussion about how Ron had been poisoned, but merely stood beside them, clenched-jawed and frightened-looking, until at last they had been allowed in to see him. "Do Mum and Dad know?" Fred asked Ginny.
"They've already seen him. They arrived an hour ago. They're in Dumbledore's office now, but they'll be back soon."
There was a pause while they all watched Ron mumble a little in his sleep.
"So the poison was in the drink," said Fred quietly.
"Yes," said Harry at once.
He could think of nothing else, and was glad for the opportunity to start discussing it again. "Slughorn poured it out.
Would he have been able to slip something into Ron's glass without you seeing?"
"Probably," said Harry. "But why would Slughorn want to poison Ron?"
"No idea," said Fred, frowning.
"You don't think he could have mixed up the glasses by mistake, meaning to get you?"
"Why would Slughorn want to poison Harry?" asked Ginny.
"I don't know," said Fred. "But there must be loads of people who'd like to poison Harry, mustn't there? The Chosen One and all that."
"So you think Slughorn's a Death Eater?" said Ginny.
"Anything's possible," said Fred darkly. "He could be under the Imperius curse," said George.
"Or he could be innocent," said Ginny. "The poison could have been in the bottle, in which case it was probably meant for Slughorn himself."
"Who'd want to kill Slughorn?"
"Dumbledore reckons Voldemort wanted Slughorn on his side," said Harry. "Slughorn was in hiding for a year before he came to Hogwarts, and..." He thought of the memory Dumbledore had not yet been able to extract from Slughorn. "And maybe Voldemort wants him out of the way. Maybe he thinks he could be valuable to Dumbledore."
"But you said Slughorn had been planning to give that bottle to Dumbledore for Christmas," Ginny reminded him. "So the poisoner could just as easily have been after Dumbledore."
"Then the poisoner didn't know Slughorn very well," said Hermione, speaking for the first time in hours and sounding as though she had a bad head cold. "Anyone who knew Slughorn would have known there was a good chance he'd keep something that tasty for himself."
"Hermione,"
croaked Ron unexpectedly from between them. They all fell silent, watching him anxiously. But after muttering incomprehensibly for a moment, he merely started snoring. The dormitory doors flew open, making them all jump. Hagrid came striding towards them, his hair rain-flecked, his bearskin coat flapping behind him, a crossbow in his hand, leaving a trail of muddy, dolphin-sized footprints all over the floor.
"Been in the forest all day," he panted. "Aragog's worse. I've been reading to him. Didn't get up to dinner till just now, and then Professor Sprout told me about Ron. How is he?"
"Not bad," said Harry. "They say he'll be okay."
"No more than 6 visitors at a time," said Madame Pumphrey, hurrying out of her office.
"Hagrid makes 6, George pointed out.
"Oh, yes," said Madame Pumphrey, who seemed to have been counting Hagrid as several people due to his vastness.
To cover her confusion, she hurried off to clear up his muddy footprints with her wand.
"I don't believe this," said Hagrid hoarsely, shaking his great shaggy head as he stared down at Ron. "Just don't believe it. Look at him lying there. Who'd want to hurt him, eh?"
"That's just what we were discussing," said Harry. "We don't know."
"Someone couldn't have a grudge against the Gryffindor Quidditch team, could they?" said Hagrid anxiously. "First Katie, now Ron."
"I can't see anyone trying to bump off a Quidditch team," said George.
"Wood might have done the Slytherins, if he could have got away with it," said Fred, fairly.
"Well, I don't think it's Quidditch, but I think there's a connection between the attacks," said Hermione, quietly.
"How do you work that out?" asked Fred.
"Well, for one thing, they both ought to have been fatal and weren't, although that was pure luck. And for another, neither the poison nor the necklace seems to have reached the person who was supposed to be killed. Of course," she added broodingly, "that makes the person behind this even more dangerous in a way,
because they don't seem to care how many people they finish off before they actually reach their victim.
Before anybody could respond to this ominous pronouncement, the dormitory doors opened again, and Mr. and Mrs. Weasley hurried up the ward. They had done no more than satisfy themselves that Ron would make a full recovery on their last visit to the ward. Now Mrs. Weasley seized hold of Harry and hugged him very tightly.
"Dumbledore's told us how you saved him with the Beezor," she sobbed. "Oh, Harry, what can we say? You saved Ginny. You saved Arthur. Now you've saved Ron."
"Don't be... I didn't," muttered Harry awkwardly. "Half our family does seem to owe you their lives, now I stop and think about it," Mr. Weasley said in a constricted voice. "Well, all I can say is that it was a lucky day for the Weasleys when Ron decided to sit in your compartment on the Hogwarts Express, Harry."
Harry could not think of any reply to this, and was almost glad when Madame Pumphrey reminded them again that there were only supposed to be 6 visitors around Ron's bed. He and Hermione rose at once to leave, and Hagrid decided to go with them, leaving Ron with his family.
"It's terrible," growled Hagrid into his beard, as the 3 of them walked back along the corridor to the marble staircase. "All this new security, and kids are still getting hurt. Dumbledore's worried sick. He don't say much, but I can tell."
"Hasn't he got any ideas, Hagrid?" asked Hermione desperately.
"I expect he's got hundreds of ideas, brain like his," said Hagrid staunchly. "But he doesn't know who sent that necklace, nor who put poison in that wine, or they'd have been caught, wouldn't they?" "What worries me," said Hagrid, lowering his voice and glancing over his shoulder. Harry, for good measure, checked the ceiling for peeves. "Is how long Hogwarts can stay open if kids are being attacked. Chamber of Secrets all over again, isn't it? There'll be panic, more parents taking their kids out of school, and next thing you know, the Board of Governors..."
Hagrid stopped talking as the ghost of a long-haired woman drifted serenely past, then resumed in a hoarse whisper.
"The Board of Governors will be talking about shutting us up for good."
"Surely not," said Hermione, looking worried.
"Got to see it from their point of view," said Hagrid heavily. "I mean, it's always been a bit of a risk sending a kid to Hogwarts, hasn't it? You expect accidents, don't you? With hundreds of underage wizards all locked up together. But attempted murder, that's different. It's no wonder Dumbledore's angry with
Hagrid stopped in his tracks, a familiar, guilty expression on what was visible of his face above his tangled black beard.
"What?" said Harry quickly. "Dumbledore's angry with Snape?" "I never said that," said Hagrid,
though his look of panic could not have been a bigger giveaway.
"Look at the time. It's getting on for midnight. I need to..."
"Hagrid, why is Dumbledore angry with Snape?" Harry asked loudly.
"Shh," said Hagrid, looking both nervous and angry. "Don't shout stuff like that, Harry. Do you want me to lose my job? Mind, I don't suppose you'd care, would you? Not now you've given up care of magic."
"Don't try and make me feel guilty. It won't work," said Harry forcefully. "What's Snape done?"
"I dunno, Harry. I shouldn't have heard it at all. I was coming out of the forest the other evening and I overheard them talking. Well, arguing. Didn't like to draw attention to myself, so I sort of skulked and tried not to listen. But it was a heated discussion, and it wasn't easy to block it out."
"Well?" Harry urged him, as Hagrid shuffled his enormous feet uneasily.
"Well, I just heard Snape saying Dumbledore took too much for granted and maybe he, Snape, didn't want to do it any more."
"Do what?"
"I dunno, Harry. It sounded like Snape was feeling a bit overworked, that's all. Anyway, Dumbledore told him flat out he'd agreed to do it and that was all there was to it. Pretty firm with him. And then he said something about Snape making investigations in his house, in Slytherin. Well, there's nothing strange about that," Hagrid added hastily, as Harry and Hermione exchanged looks full of meaning. "All the heads of house were asked to look into that necklace business."
"Yeah, but Dumbledore's not having rows with the rest of them, is he?" said Harry.
"Look!"
Hagrid twisted his crossbow uncomfortably in his hands. There was a loud splintering sound, and it snapped in two.
"I know what you're like about Snape, Harry, and I don't want you to go reading more into this than there is."
"Look out," said Hermione tersely. They turned just in time to see the shadow of Argus Filch looming over the wall behind them, before the man himself turned the corner, hunchbacked, his jowls a-quiver.
"Ho, ho!" he wheezed. "Out of bed so late, this'll mean detention." "No, it won't, Filch," said Hagrid shortly. "They're with me, aren't they?"
"And what difference does that make?"
asked Filch obnoxiously.
"I'm a ruddy teacher, aren't I, you sneaking squib?" said Hagrid, firing up at once.
There was a nasty hissing noise as Filch swelled with fury. Mrs. Norris had arrived unseen and was twisting herself sinuously around Filch's skinny ankles.
"Get going,"
said Hagrid out of the corner of his mouth. Harry did not need telling twice. He and Hermione both hurried off, Hagrid and Filch's raised voices echoing behind them as they ran. They passed Peeves near the turning into Gryffindor Tower, but he was streaking happily towards the source of the yelling, cackling and calling,
"When there's strife and when there's trouble, call on Peevesy, he'll make double!"
The fat lady was snoozing and not pleased to be awoken, but swung forwards grumpily to allow them to clamber into the mercifully peaceful and empty common room. It did not seem that people knew about Ron yet. Harry was very relieved. He had been interrogated enough that day. Hermione bade him good night and set off for the girls' dormitory. Harry, however, remained behind, taking a seat beside the fire and looking down into the dying embers. So Dumbledore had argued with Snape. In spite of all he had told Harry, in spite of his insistence that he trusted Snape completely, he had lost his temper with him. He did not think that Snape had tried hard enough to investigate the Slytherins, or perhaps to investigate a single Slytherin. Malfoy? Was it because Dumbledore did not want Harry to do anything foolish, to take matters into his own hands, that he had pretended there was nothing in Harry's suspicions? That seemed likely. It might even be that Dumbledore did not want anything to distract Harry from their lessons, or from procuring that memory from Slughorn. Perhaps Dumbledore did not think it right to confide suspicions about his staff to 16-year-olds.
"There you are, Potter!"
Harry jumped to his feet in shock, his wand at the ready. He had been quite convinced that the common room was empty. He had not been at all prepared for a hulking figure to rise suddenly out of a distant chair. A closer look showed him that it was Cormac MacLagan.
"I've been waiting for you to come back," said MacLagan,
disregarding Harry's drawn wand.
"Must have fallen asleep. Look, I saw him taking Weasley up to the hospital wing earlier. Didn't look like he'd be fit for next week's match."
It took Harry a few moments to realise what MacLagan was talking about. "Oh, right, Quidditch," he said, putting his wand back into the belt of his jeans and running a hand wearily through his hair. "Yeah, he might not make it."
"Well then, I'll be playing keeper, won't I?" said MacLagan.
"Yeah," said Harry. "Yeah, suppose so." He could not think of an argument against it. After all, MacLagan had certainly performed second best in the trials.
"Excellent," said MacLagan in a satisfied voice.
"So, when's practice?"
"What?
Oh, there's one tomorrow evening."
"Good. Listen, Potter, we should have a talk beforehand. I've got some ideas on strategy you might find useful."
"Right," said Harry unenthusiastically. "Well, I'll hear them tomorrow, then. I'm pretty tired now. See you." The news that Ron had been poisoned spread quickly next day, but it did not cause the sensation that Katie's attack had done. People seemed to think that it might have been an accident, given that he had been in the potion master's room at the time, and that as he had been given an antidote immediately, there was no real harm done. In fact, the Gryffindors were generally much more interested in the upcoming Quidditch match against Hufflepuff, for many of them wanted to see Zacharias Smith, who played chaser on the Hufflepuff team, punished soundly for his commentary during the opening match against Slytherin. Harry, however, had never been less interested in Quidditch. He was rapidly becoming obsessed with Draco Malfoy. Still checking the Marauder's map whenever he got a chance, he sometimes made detours to wherever Malfoy happened to be, but had not yet detected him doing anything out of the ordinary. And still there were those inexplicable times when Malfoy simply vanished from the map. But Harry did not get a lot of time to consider the problem, what with Quidditch practice, homework, and the fact that he was now being dogged wherever he went by Cormac McLaggen and Lavender Brown. He could not decide which of them was more annoying. McLaggen kept up a constant stream of hints that he would make a better permanent keeper for the team than Ron, and that now Harry was seeing him play regularly, he would surely come around to this way of thinking too. He was also keen to criticise the other players and provide Harry with detailed training schemes, so that more than once Harry was forced to remind him who was captain. Meanwhile, Lavender kept sidling up to Harry to discuss Ron, which Harry found almost more wearing than McLaggen's Quidditch lectures. At first, Lavender had been very annoyed that nobody had thought to tell her that Ron was in the hospital wing. "I mean, I am his girlfriend." But unfortunately she had now decided to forgive Harry this lapse of memory and was keen to have lots of in-depth chats with him about Ron's feelings, a most uncomfortable experience that Harry would have happily foregone. "Look, why don't you talk to Ron about all this?" Harry asked, after a particularly long interrogation from Lavender that took in everything from precisely what Ron had said about her new dress robes to whether or not Harry thought that Ron considered his relationship with Lavender to be serious.
"Well, I would, but he's always asleep when I go and see him," said Lavender fretfully.
"Is he?" said Harry, surprised, for he had found Ron perfectly alert every time he had been up to the hospital wing, both highly interested in the news of Dumbledore and Snape's row, and keen to abuse McLaggen as much as possible.
"Is Hermione Granger still visiting him?" Lavender demanded suddenly.
"Yeah, I think so. Well, they're friends, aren't they?" said Harry uncomfortably.
"Friends? Don't make me laugh," said Lavender scornfully. "She didn't talk to him for weeks after he started going out with me. But I suppose she wants to make up with him now he's all interesting."
"Would you call getting poisoned being interesting?" asked Harry.
"Anyway, sorry, got to go. There's McLaggen coming for a talk about Quidditch," said Harry hurriedly, and he dashed sideways through a door pretending to be solid wall and sprinted down the shortcut that would take him off to potions, where, thankfully, neither Lavender nor McLaggen could follow him.
On the morning of the Quidditch match against Hufflepuff, Harry dropped in on the hospital wing before heading down to the pitch. Ron was very agitated. Madame Pomfrey would not let him go down to watch the match, feeling it would overexcite him.
"So how's McLaggen shaping up?" he asked Harry nervously, apparently forgetting that he had already asked the same question twice.
"I've told you," said Harry patiently. "He could be world-class, and I wouldn't want to keep him. He keeps trying to tell everyone what to do. He thinks he could play every position better than the rest of us. I can't wait to be shot of him."
"And speaking of getting shot of people," Harry added, getting to his feet and picking up his firebolt, "will you stop pretending to be asleep when Lavender comes to see you? She's driving me mad as well."
"Oh," said Ron, looking sheepish. "Yeah, all right."
"If you don't want to go out with her any more, just tell her," said Harry.
"Yeah, well, it's not that easy, is it?" said Ron. He paused. "Hermione gonna look in before the match?" he added casually. "No, she's already gone down to the pitch with Ginny." "Oh," said Ron, looking rather glum. "Right. Well, good luck. Hope you hammer Smith." "I'll try," said Harry, shouldering his broom. "See you after the match." He hurried down through the deserted corridors. The whole school was outside, either already seated in the stadium or heading down towards it. He was looking out of the windows he passed, trying to gauge how much wind they were facing, when a noise ahead made him glance up, and he saw Malfoy walking towards him, accompanied by two girls, both of whom looked sulky and resentful. Malfoy stopped short at the sight of Harry, then gave a short, humourless laugh, and continued walking. "Where are you going?" Harry demanded. "Yeah, I'm really going to tell you, because it's your business, Potter," sneered Malfoy. "You better hurry up. They'll be waiting for the chosen captain, the boy who scored, whatever they call you these days." One of the girls gave an unwilling giggle. Harry stared at her. She blushed. Malfoy pushed past Harry, and she and her friend followed at a trot, turning the corner and vanishing from view. Harry stood rooted on the spot and watched them disappear. This was infuriating. He was already cutting it fine to get to the match on time, and yet there was Malfoy, skulking off while the rest of the school was absent. Harry's best chance of discovering what Malfoy was up to. The silent seconds trickled past, and Harry remained where he was, frozen, gazing at the place where Malfoy had vanished. "Where have you been?" demanded Ginny, as Harry sprinted into the changing room. The whole team was changed and ready. Coot and Peaks, the beaters, were both hitting their clubs nervously against their legs. "I met Malfoy," Harry told her quietly, as he pulled his scarlet robes over his head. So, I wanted to know how come he's up at the castle with a couple of girlfriends while everyone else is down here. Does it matter right now?" "Well, I'm not likely to find out, am I?" said Harry, seizing his firebolt and pushing his glasses straight. "Come on, then." And without another word, he marched out onto the pitch to deafening cheers and boos. There was little wind. The clouds were patchy. Every now and then there were dazzling flashes of bright sunlight. "Tricky conditions," McLagan said bracingly to the team. "Coot, Peaks, you'll want to fly out of the sun so they don't see you coming." "I'm the captain, McLagan. Shut up giving them instructions," said Harry angrily. "Just get up by the goalposts." Once McLagan had marched off, Harry turned to Coot and Peaks. "Make sure you do fly out of the sun," he told them grudgingly. He shook hands with the Hufflepuff captain, and then, on Madam Hooch's whistle, kicked off and rose into the air, higher than the rest of his team, streaking around the pitch in search of the snitch. If he could catch it good and early, there might be a chance he could get back up to the castle, seize the Marauder's map, and find out what Malfoy was doing. "And that Smith of Hufflepuff with the quaffle," said a dreamy voice, echoing over the grounds. "He did the commentary last time, of course, and Ginny Weasley flew into him, I think probably on purpose. It looked like it. Smith was being quite rude about Gryffindor. I expect he regrets that now he's playing them. Oh, look, he's lost the quaffle. Ginny took it from him. I do like her. She's very nice." Harry stared down at the commentator's podium. Surely nobody in their right mind would have let Luna Lovegood commentate. But even from above there was no mistaking that long, dirty blonde hair or the necklace of butterbeer corks. Beside Luna, Professor McGonagall was looking slightly uncomfortable, as though she was indeed having second thoughts about this appointment. "But now that big Hufflepuff player's got the quaffle from her. I can't remember his name. It's something like Bibble. No, Buggins.
It's Cadwallader,
said Professor McGonagall loudly from beside Luna. The crowd laughed. Harry stared around for the snitch. There was no sign of it. Moments later, Cadwallader scored. McLagan had been shouting criticism at Ginny for allowing the quaffle out of her possession, with the result that he had not noticed the large red ball soaring past his right ear.
"McLagan, will you pay attention to what you're supposed to be doing and leave everyone else alone?"
bellowed Harry, wheeling round to face his keeper.
"You're not setting a great example,"
McLagan shouted back, red-faced and furious.
"And Harry Potter's now having an argument with his keeper,"
said Luna serenely, while both Hufflepuffs and Slytherins below in the crowd cheered and jeered.
"I don't think that'll help him find the snitch. But maybe it's a clever ruse."
Swearing angrily, Harry spun round and set off around the pitch again, scanning the skies for some sign of the tiny winged golden ball. Ginny and Demelza scored a goal apiece, giving the red and gold-clad supporters below something to cheer about. Then Cadwallader scored again, making things level. But Luna did not seem to have noticed. She appeared singularly uninterested in such mundane things as the score, and kept attempting to draw the crowd's attention to such things as interestingly shaped clouds, and the possibility that Zacharias Smith, who had so far failed to maintain possession of the quaffle for longer than a minute, was suffering from something called loser's lurgy.
70-40 to Hufflepuff,
barked Professor McGonagall into Luna's megaphone.
"Is it already?" said Luna vaguely. "Oh, look, the Gryffindor keeper's got hold of one of the beaters' bats."
Harry spun round in mid-air. Sure enough, McLagan, for reasons best known to himself, had pulled Peeks's bat from him and appeared to be demonstrating how to hit a bludger towards an oncoming Cadwallader.
"Will you give him back his bat and get back to the goalposts?"
roared Harry, pelting towards McLagan, just as McLagan took a ferocious swipe at the bludger and mishit it. A blinding, sickening pain, a flash of light, distant screams, and the sensation of falling down a long tunnel. And the next thing Harry knew, he was lying in a remarkably warm and comfortable bed and looking up at a lamp that was throwing a circle of golden light onto a shadowy ceiling. He raised his head awkwardly. There, on his left, was a familiar-looking, freckly, red-haired person.
"Nice of you to drop in,"
said Ron, grinning. Harry blinked and looked around. Of course, he was in the hospital wing. The sky outside was indigo, streaked with crimson. The match must have finished hours ago, as had any hope of cornering Malfoy. Harry's head felt strangely heavy. He raised a hand and felt a stiff turban of bandages. What happened?
"Cracked skull," said Madame Pumphrey, bustling up and pushing him back against his pillows. "Nothing to worry about. I mended it at once, but I'm keeping you in overnight. You shouldn't overexert yourself for a few hours."
"I don't want to stay here overnight," said Harry angrily, sitting up and throwing back his covers. "I want to find McLagan and kill him!"
"I'm afraid that would come under the heading of over-exertion," said Madame Pumphrey, pushing him firmly back onto the bed and raising her wand in a threatening manner. "You will stay here until I discharge you, Potter, or I shall call the headmaster."
She bustled back into her office, and Harry sank back into his pillows, fuming.
"Do you know how much we lost by?" he asked Ron through clenched teeth. "Well, yeah, I do," said Ron apologetically. "Final score was 320-60.
"Brilliant!" said Harry savagely. "Really brilliant! When I get hold of McLagan—"
"You don't want to get hold of him. He's the size of a troll," said Ron reasonably.
"Personally, I think there's a lot to be said for hexing him with that toenail thing of the prince's. Anyway, the rest of the team might have dealt with him before you get out of here. They're not happy."
There was a note of badly suppressed glee in Ron's voice. Harry could tell he was nothing short of thrilled that McLagan had messed up so badly. Harry lay there, staring up at the patch of light on the ceiling, his recently mended skull not hurting precisely, but feeling slightly tender underneath all the bandaging.
"I could hear the match commentary from here," said Ron, his voice now shaking with laughter.
"I hope Luna always commentates from now on. Losers, Lurgy!" But Harry was still too angry to see much humour in the situation, and after a while Ron's snorts subsided.
"Ginny came in to visit while you were unconscious," he said after a long pause,
and Harry's imagination zoomed into overdrive, rapidly constructing a scene in which Ginny, weeping over his lifeless form, confessed her feelings of deep attraction to him, while Ron gave them his blessing. "She reckons you only just arrived in time for the match. How come? You left here early enough."
"Oh," said Harry, as the scene in his mind's eye imploded.
"Yeah. Well, I saw Malfoy sneaking off with a couple of girls who didn't look like they wanted to be with him, and that's the second time he's made sure he isn't down on the Quidditch pitch with the rest of the school. He skipped the last match too, remember?"
Harry sighed.
"Wish I'd followed him now. The match was such a fiasco." "Don't be stupid," said Ron sharply. "You couldn't have missed a Quidditch match just to follow Malfoy. You're the captain." "I want to know what he's up to," said Harry. "And don't tell me it's all in my head, not after what I overheard between him and Snape." "I never said it was all in your head," said Ron, hoisting himself up on an elbow in turn and frowning at Harry. "But there's no rule saying only one person at a time can be plotting anything in this place." "You're getting a bit obsessed with Malfoy, Harry. I mean, thinking about missing a match just to follow him." "I want to catch him at it," said Harry in frustration. "I mean, where's he going when he disappears off the map?"
"I don't know. Hogsmeade," suggested Ron, yawning.
"I've never seen him going along any of the secret passageways on the map. I thought they were being watched now, anyway."
"Well, then, I don't know," said Ron.
Silence fell between them. Harry stared up at the circle of lamplight above him, thinking. If only he had Rufus Scrimgeour's power, he would have been able to set a tail upon Malfoy. But unfortunately, Harry did not have an office full of aurors at his command. He thought fleetingly of trying to set something up with the D.A., but there again was the problem that people would be missed from lessons. Most of them, after all, still had full timetables. There was a low, rumbling snore from Ron's bed. After a while, Madame Pumphrey came out of her office, this time wearing a thick dressing gown. It was easiest to feign sleep. Harry rolled over onto his side and listened to all the curtains closing themselves as she waved her wand. The lamps dimmed, and she returned to her office. He heard the door click behind her, and knew that she was off to bed. This was, Harry reflected in the darkness, the third time that he had been brought to the hospital wing because of a Quidditch injury. Last time he had fallen off his broom due to the presence of Dementors around the pitch, and the time before that all the bones had been removed from his arm by the incurably inept Professor Lockhart. That had been his most painful injury by far. He remembered the agony of regrowing an armful of bones in one night, a discomfort not eased by the arrival of an unexpected visitor in the middle of the... Harry sat bolt upright, his heart pounding, his bandaged turban askew. He had the solution at last. There was a way to have Malfoy followed. How could he have forgotten? Why hadn't he thought of it before? But the question was, how to call him? What did you do? Quietly, tentatively, Harry spoke into the darkness. Creature? There was a very loud crack and the sounds of scuffling and squeaks filled the silent room. Ron awoke with a yelp.
"What's going—"
Harry pointed his wand hastily at the door of Madame Pumphrey's office and muttered, "Muffliato," so that she would not come running. Then he scrambled to the end of his bed for a better look at what was going on. Two house elves were rolling around on the floor in the middle of the dormitory, one wearing a shrunken maroon jumper and several woolly hats, the other a filthy old rag strung over his hips like a loincloth. Then there was another loud bang, and Peeves the Poltergeist appeared in mid-air above the wrestling elves.
"I was watching that, Potty,"
he told Harry indignantly, pointing at the fight below, before letting out a loud cackle.
"Look at the ickle creatures squabbling. Bitey-bitey, punchy-punchy. Creature will not insult Harry Potter in front of Dobby. No, he won't, or Dobby will shut Creature's mouth for him,"
cried Dobby in a high-pitched voice.
"Kicky-scratchy,"
cried Peeves happily, now pelting bits of chalk at the elves to enrage them further.
"Tweaky-pokey." "Creature will say what he likes about his master. Oh, yes, and what a master he is, filthy friend of Mudblood's. Oh, what would poor Creature's mistress say?"
Exactly what Creature's mistress would have said they did not find out, for at that moment Dobby sank his knobbly little fist into Creature's mouth and knocked out half of his teeth. Harry and Ron both leapt out of their beds and wrenched the two elves apart, though they continued to try to kick and punch each other, egged on by Peeves, who swooped around the lamp, squealing,
"Stick your fingers up his nosy, draw his cork and pull his earsies."
Harry aimed his wand at Peeves and said, "Langlock!" Peeves clutched at his throat, gulped, then swooped from the room, making obscene gestures, but unable to speak, owing to the fact that his tongue had just glued itself to the roof of his mouth. "Nice one," said Ron appreciatively, lifting Dobby into the air so that his flailing limbs no longer made contact with Creature. "That was another Prince Hex, wasn't it?" "Yeah," said Harry, twisting Creature's wizened arm into a half-Nelson. "Right, I'm forbidding you to fight each other. Well, Creature, you're forbidden to fight Dobby. Dobby, I know I'm not allowed to give you orders."
"Dobby is a free-house elf, and he can obey anyone he likes, and Dobby will do whatever Harry Potter wants him to do," said Dobby,
tears now streaming down his shrivelled little face onto his jumper. "Okay, then," said Harry, and he and Ron both released the elves, who fell to the floor, but did not continue fighting.
"Master called me,"
croaked Creature, sinking into a bow, even as he gave Harry a look that plainly wished him a painful death. "Yeah, I did," said Harry, glancing towards Madame Pumphrey's office door to check that the Muffliato spell was still working. There was no sign that she had heard any of the commotion. "I've got a job for you."
"Creature will do whatever Master wants," said Creature,
sinking so low that his lips almost touched his gnarled toes.
"Because Creature has no choice. But Creature is ashamed to have such a master. Yes, Dobby will do it, Harry Potter,"
squeaked Dobby, his tennis-ball-sized eyes still swimming with tears.
"Dobby would be honoured to help Harry Potter."
"Come to think of it, it would be good to have both of you," said Harry. "Okay, then. I want you to tail Draco Malfoy." Ignoring the look of mingled surprise and exasperation on Ron's face, Harry went on. "I want to know where he's going, who he's meeting, and what he's doing. I want you to follow him around the clock."
"Yes, Harry Potter,"
said Dobby at once, his great eyes shining with excitement.
"And if Dobby does it wrong, Dobby will throw himself off the topmost tower, Harry Potter."
"There won't be any need for that," said Harry hastily.
"Master wants me to follow the youngest of the Malfoys," croaked Creature. "Master wants me to spy upon the pure-blood great-nephew of my old mistress."
"That's the one," said Harry, foreseeing a great danger and determining to prevent it immediately.
And you're forbidden to tip him off, creature, or to show him what you're up to, or to talk to him at all, or to write him messages, or to contact him in any way. Got it?
He thought he could see Creature struggling to see a loophole in the instructions he had just been given, and waited. After a moment or two, and to Harry's great satisfaction, Creature bowed deeply again and said, with bitter resentment,
"Master thinks of everything, and Creature must obey him, even though Creature would much rather be the servant of the Malfoy boy. Oh, yes!"
"That's settled, then," said Harry. "I'll want regular reports, but make sure I'm not surrounded by people when you turn up. Ron and Hermione are okay. And don't tell anyone what you're doing. Just stick to Malfoy, like a couple of wart plasters."
Chapter 20. Lord Voldemort's Request. Harry and Ron left the hospital wing first thing on Monday morning, restored to full health by the ministrations of Madame Pomfrey, and now able to enjoy the benefits of having been knocked out and poisoned, the best of which was that Hermione was friends with Ron again. Hermione even escorted them down to breakfast, bringing with her the news that Ginny had argued with Dean. The drowsing creature in Harry's chest suddenly raised its head, sniffing the air hopefully.
"What did they row about?" he asked, trying to sound casual as they turned into a seventh-floor corridor, which was deserted but for a very small girl who had been examining a tapestry of trolls in tutus. She looked terrified at the sight of the approaching sixth years and dropped the heavy brass scales she was carrying. "It's all right," said Hermione kindly, hurrying forwards to help her. "Here!" She tapped the broken scales with her wand and said, "Reparo!" The girl did not say thank you, but remained rooted to the spot as they passed and watched them out of sight. Ron glanced back at her. "I swear they're getting smaller," he said.
"Never mind her," said Harry a little impatiently. "What did Ginny and Dean row about, Hermione?" "Oh, Dean was laughing about McLagan hitting that bludger at you," said Hermione.
"It must have looked funny," said Ron reasonably.
"It didn't look funny at all," said Hermione hotly. "It looked terrible, and if Coot and Peaks hadn't caught Harry, he could have been very badly hurt."
"Yeah, well, there was no need for Ginny and Dean to split up over it," said Harry, still trying to sound casual. "Or are they still together?"
"Yes, they are, but why are you so interested?" asked Hermione, giving Harry a sharp look.
"I just don't want my Quidditch team messed up again," he said hastily. But Hermione continued to look suspicious, and he was most relieved when a voice behind them called,
"Harry,"
giving him an excuse to turn his back on her. "Oh, hi, Luna."
"I went to the hospital wing to find you," said Luna, rummaging in her bag, "but they said you'd left."
She thrust what appeared to be a green onion, a large spotted toadstool, and a considerable amount of what looked like cat litter into Ron's hands, finally pulling out a rather grubby scroll of parchment that she handed to Harry.
"I've been told to give you this."
It was a small roll of parchment, which Harry recognized at once as another invitation to a lesson with Dumbledore. "Tonight," he told Ron and Hermione once he had unrolled it.
"Nice commentary last match,"
said Ron to Luna as she took back the green onion, the toadstool and the cat litter. Luna smiled vaguely.
"You're making fun of me, aren't you?" she said. "Everyone says I was dreadful."
"No, I'm serious," said Ron earnestly. "I can't remember enjoying commentary more. What is this, by the way?"
he added, holding the onion-like object up to eye level.
"Oh, it's a gurdy root,"
she said, stuffing the cat litter and the toadstool back into her bag.
"You can keep it if you like. I've got a few of them.
They're really excellent for warding off gulping plimpies."
And she walked away, leaving Ron chortling, still clutching the gurdy root. "You know, she's grown on me, Luna," he said as they set off again for the great hall. "I know she's insane, but it's in a good..." He stopped talking very suddenly. Lavender Brown was standing at the foot of the marble staircase, looking thunderous. "Hi," said Ron nervously. "Come on," Harry muttered to Hermione, and they sped past, though not before they had heard Lavender say,
"Why didn't you tell me you were getting out today? And why was she with you?"
Ron looked both sulky and annoyed when he appeared at breakfast half an hour later, and though he sat with Lavender, Harry did not see them exchange a word all the time they were together. Hermione was acting as though she was quite oblivious to all of this, but once or twice Harry saw an inexplicable smirk cross her face. All that day she seemed to be in a particularly good mood, and that evening in the common room she even consented to look over, in other words, finish writing, Harry's herbology essay, something she had been resolutely refusing to do up to that point, because she had known that Harry would then let Ron copy his work. "Thanks a lot, Hermione," said Harry, giving her a hasty pat on the back as he checked his watch and saw that it was nearly 8 o'clock. "Listen, I've got to hurry or I'll be late for Dumbledore." She did not answer, but merely crossed out a few of his feebler sentences in a weary sort of way. Grinning, Harry hurried out through the portrait hole and off to the headmaster's office. The gargoyle leapt aside at the mention of toffee eclairs, and Harry took the spiral staircase 2 steps at a time, knocking on the door just as a clock within chimed 8. "Enter," called Dumbledore. But as Harry put out a hand to push the door, it was wrenched open from inside. There stood Professor Trelawney. "Aha!" she cried, pointing dramatically at Harry as she blinked at him through her magnifying spectacles. "So this is the reason I am to be thrown unceremoniously from your office, Dumbledore?" "My dear Sybil," said Dumbledore in a slightly exasperated voice, "there is no question of throwing you unceremoniously from anywhere. But Harry does have an appointment, and I really don't think there is any more to be said."
"Very well," said Professor Trelawney in a deeply wounded voice. "If you will not banish the usurping nag, so be it. Perhaps I shall find a school where my talents are better appreciated."
She pushed past Harry and disappeared down the spiral staircase. They heard her stumble halfway down, and Harry guessed that she had tripped over one of her trailing shawls.
"Please close the door and sit down, Harry," said Dumbledore, sounding rather tired.
Harry obeyed, noticing as he took his usual seat in front of Dumbledore's desk that the pensieve lay between them once more, as did 2 more tiny crystal bottles full of swirling memory.
"Professor Trelawney still isn't happy Ferenczi is teaching, then?" Harry asked.
"No," said Dumbledore.
"Divination is turning out to be much more trouble than I could have foreseen, never having studied the subject myself. I cannot ask Ferenczi to return to the forest, where he is now an outcast, nor can I ask Sybil Trelawney to leave. Between ourselves, she has no idea of the danger she would be in outside the castle. She does not know, and I think it would be unwise to enlighten her, that she made the prophecy about you and Voldemort, you see." Dumbledore heaved a deep sigh, then said, "But never mind my staff problems. We have much more important matters to discuss. Firstly, have you managed the task I set you at the end of our previous lesson?"
"Ah," said Harry, brought up short,
what with apparition lessons and Quidditch, and Ron being poisoned, and getting his skull cracked, and his determination to find out what Draco Malfoy was up to, Harry had almost forgotten about the memory Dumbledore had asked him to extract from Professor Slughorn.
"Well, I asked Professor Slughorn about it at the end of Potions, sir, but he wouldn't give it to me."
There was a little silence.
"I see," said Dumbledore eventually, peering at Harry over the top of his half-moon spectacles, and giving Harry the usual sensation that he was being X-rayed. "And you feel that you have exerted your very best efforts in this matter, do you? That you have exercised all of your considerable ingenuity? That you have left no depth of cunning unplumbed in your quest to retrieve the memory?"
"Well," Harry stalled, at a loss for what to say next. His single attempt to get hold of the memory suddenly seemed embarrassingly feeble.
"Well, the day Ron swallowed Love Potion by mistake, I took him to Professor Slughorn. I thought maybe if I got Professor Slughorn in a good enough mood..."
"And did that work?" asked Dumbledore.
"Well, no, sir, because Ron got poisoned, which, naturally, made you forget all about trying to retrieve the memory. I would have expected nothing else while your best friend was in danger. Once it became clear that Mr. Weasley was going to make a full recovery, however, I would have hoped that you returned to the task I set you. I thought I made it clear to you how very important that memory is. Indeed, I did my best to impress upon you that it is the most crucial memory of all, and that we will be wasting our time without it."
A hot, prickly feeling of shame spread from the top of Harry's head all the way down his body. Dumbledore had not raised his voice. He did not even sound angry, but Harry would have preferred him to yell. This cold disappointment was worse than anything.
"Sir," he said, a little desperately, "it isn't that I wasn't bothered or anything. I've just had other things."
"Other things on your mind," Dumbledore finished the sentence for him.
"I see."
Silence fell between them again, the most uncomfortable silence Harry had ever experienced with Dumbledore. It seemed to go on and on, punctuated only by the little grunting snores of the portrait of Armando Dippet over Dumbledore's head. Harry felt strangely diminished, as though he had shrunk a little since he had entered the room. When he could stand it no longer, he said,
"Professor Dumbledore, I'm really sorry. I should have done more. I should have realized you wouldn't have asked me to do it if it wasn't really important."
"Thank you for saying that, Harry," said Dumbledore quietly. "May I hope, then, that you will give this matter higher priority from now on? There will be little point our meeting after tonight unless we have that memory."
"I'll do it, sir. I'll get it from him," Harry said earnestly.
"Then we shall say no more about it just now," said Dumbledore more kindly. "But continue with our story where we left off. You remember where that was?"
"Yes, sir," said Harry quickly. "Voldemort killed his father and his grandparents and made it look as though his Uncle Morfin did it. Then he went back to Hogwarts and he asked
Professor Slughorn about Horcruxes," he mumbled shamefacedly.
"Very good," said Dumbledore. "Now you will remember, I hope, that I told you at the very outset of these meetings of ours that we would be entering the realms of guesswork and speculation."
"Yes, sir."
"Thus far, as I hope you agree, I have shown you reasonably firm sources of fact for my deductions as to what Voldemort did until the age of 17.
Harry nodded.
"But now, Harry," said Dumbledore, "now things become murkier and stranger."
"If it was difficult to find evidence about the boy Riddle, it has been almost impossible to find anyone prepared to reminisce about the man Voldemort. In fact, I doubt whether there is a soul alive, apart from himself, who could give us a full account of his life since he left Hogwarts. However,
I have two last memories that I would like to share with you." Dumbledore indicated the two little crystal bottles gleaming beside the pensieve. "I shall then be glad of your opinion as to whether the conclusions I have drawn from them seem likely." The idea that Dumbledore valued his opinion this highly made Harry feel even more deeply ashamed that he had failed in the task of retrieving the Horcrux memory, and he shifted guiltily in his seat as Dumbledore raised the first of the two bottles to the light and examined it. "I hope you are not tired of diving into other people's memories, for they are curious recollections, these two," he said. "This first one came from a very old house elf by the name of Hokey. Before we see what Hokey witnessed, I must quickly recount how Lord Voldemort left Hogwarts. He reached the seventh year of his schooling with, as you might have expected, top grades in every examination he had taken. All around him, his classmates were deciding which jobs they were to pursue once they had left Hogwarts. Nearly everybody expected spectacular things from Tom Riddle, prefect, head boy, winner of the special award for services to the school. I know that several teachers, Professor Slughorn amongst them, suggested that he join the Ministry of Magic, offered to set up appointments, put him in touch with useful contacts. He refused all offers. The next thing the staff knew, Voldemort was working at Borgin and Burke's."
"At Borgin and Burke's?"
Harry repeated, stunned. "At Borgin and Burke's," repeated Dumbledore calmly. "I think you will see what attractions the place held for him when we have entered Hokey's memory, but this was not Voldemort's first choice of job. Hardly anyone knew of it at the time. I was one of the few in whom the then headmaster confided, but Voldemort first approached Professor Dippet and asked whether he could remain at Hogwarts as a teacher."